Good evening all, welcome to this Kingborough Council meeting. It's Monday the 10th of March and it's 5:30pm. My name's Dean Winter and I officially declare this meeting open. The audio recording, I'd like to welcome everyone in attendance and advise that our council meetings are recorded and made publicly available on our website, and so in accordance with that policy I now ask our General Manager to confirm the audio recording has commenced. Confirmed. And he's confirmed that. Acknowledgement of traditional owners. I begin tonight by paying our council's respect to the traditional and original custodians of this land, the Muwinina people. I acknowledge the contemporary Tasmanian Aboriginal community who have survived invasion and dispossession and continue to maintain and fight for their identity, culture and Indigenous rights. Attendees this evening, we have myself, Councillor Winter, Councillor Westwood, Councillor Bastone, Councillor Cordova, Councillor Midgley, Councillor Street, Councillor Wass and Councillor Reet. From our staff this evening we have our General Manager Gary Arnold, Deputy General Manager Tony Ferrier, our Executive Manager of Engineering Services is David Reeve, our Executive Manager of Governance and Community Services Daniel Smee, Manager of Environmental Services John Dool, our NRM Coordinator is Liz Quinn, our Contracts and Procurement Coordinator is Hugh Rowley, and our Executive Assistant is Amanda Morton. Apologies this evening, we have Councillor Flora Fox is on a leave of absence, and we have an apology from Councillor David Grace. I should also say I did say that Councillor Amanda Mitchell is with us. She has just texted to say that she'll be with us very shortly. If that changes, obviously she'll be added as an apology. Confirmation of minutes. There's a recommended motion that the minutes of the open session of Council Meeting Number 4 held on 24 February 2020 be confirmed as a true record. Would someone like to move and second that? Moved by Councillor Reet, seconded by Councillor Westwood. All those in favour, please say aye. Those against, the motion is carried unanimously with the exception of Councillor Midgley, who's not yet with us. Workshops held since the last council meeting. On the 2nd of March, we held a workshop to discuss progress on the city deal and state and federal election projects. Declarations of interest. Does any councillor have an interest that they would like to declare? There being none, we'll move on. Transfer of agenda items. Would anyone like to propose that we transfer an agenda item this evening? There being none, we'll move on again. We now move to questions without notice from the public. Does any member of the public wish to ask a question without notice? That being the case, we'll move on to questions on notice from the public. Question one is on traffic plans from Mr. Greg Simpson. There's an officer's response there. Question two is on pedestrian safety on Willowbend Road. With his officer's response. Question three is on a possible breach of meeting procedures from Mr. Julian Bush. There's also question four is the Kingborough Sports Precinct Future Directions Plan. Question from Mr. Jim Evans. Question five is the implementation of the Climate Change Action Plan, with a response there from Ms. Claire Corrigan, with the officer's response. Question six is on climate change resourcing, also from Ms. Corrigan. Question seven is on funding of projects from Ms. Sarah Anderson, with an officer's response there as well. Which now brings us to questions without notice from councillors. Does any councillor wish to ask a question without notice? Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, through you, Mayor. I just wondered whether there was any update that you or maybe the General Manager would like to give about the coronavirus, and what localised initiatives might be taking place, be they education or otherwise, to help make sure that we help the Department of Health mitigate and prepare a response as best as possible. Thanks.
General Manager.
Through you, Mr. Mayor. Councillor Cordova, thank you for the question. As a management team, we have recently reviewed our business continuity plan. We have made sure that that is up to date. We've been in constant contact with the Department of Health, as you'd appreciate. We are meeting tomorrow with our medical practitioner, Dr. Lord, to get the latest update from his perspective, and we will continue a watching brief with both the Department of State Health and the State Emergency Management Committee. We had an officer in attendance at that meeting last week, so we're keeping in close contact with the state government and any initiatives that they implement.
Thanks. excuse me, just a follow-up question about do you anticipate that there will be likely expenditure from council on things like additional hand sanitizer placements or anything like that? Like, will there be active steps taken? Do you anticipate?
General Manager.
Through you, Mr. Mayor. Yes, the short answer to that question is yes, but within the existing budget for this financial year, we've already purchased additional hand sanitizers. We were one of the first councils to place an order for the flu vaccine, which is offered to staff. We expect to have the first supply available later this month.
No other lights on at this stage, so that being the case, we'll move on. Move on to questions on notice from councillors. Question one is on Crescent Drive, Margate, from Councillor Wass, with a response there on page 7. The question two is electric vehicle charging station at Kingston Park from Councillor Midgley. Question three is on landscaping for planning applications from Councillor Midgley. Question four is also from Councillor Midgley on the stormwater levy. And question five is on the budget consultation process from Councillor Midgley. So with that, our open session adjourns and the Planning Authority will commence at 5:37 p.m. The first item is on page 10 with a recommended motion on page 11, and it's titled Delegated Authority for the period of 12 February to 25 February. Would anyone like to move and second that recommended motion? Moved by Councillor Street, seconded by Councillor Wass. Any questions or comments in relation to this item? Okay. The motion is that the report be noted. It was moved by Councillor Street, seconded by Councillor Wass. All those in favour, please say aye. Those against, motion is carried unanimously, with the exception of Councillor Midgley, who's still not with us. And that's a problem, because the Planning Authority session adjourns and the open session of Council commences at 5:38 p.m. Any advice? Yeah, let's just check with the GM that you can do it, or could we perhaps just hold it off a little bit and deal with something? Perhaps we could hear a motion to move to deal with something else first. Yeah. Happy to hear a motion transfer. Yeah. Do you want to just say what the motion is?
Mayor, I would like to move a motion to discuss the officer's report to council 17.1 play space and playground strategy.
Have a seconder for that motion? Councillor Westwood. We'll just wait for Ms. Morton. Are you happy with the motion as written there, Councillor Cordover?
Yes.
Yep, just for the audio, the motion is to discuss item 17.1 prior to the notice of motion. It was moved by Councillor Cordover, seconded by Councillor Westwood. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Those against? It's carried with the exception of Councillor Midgley. we're already doing it. Okay, so we move on to that item 17.1, which is going to be on the screen, it's it. The play space and playground strategy. So there's a recommended motion on page 16. Would someone like to move and second that motion? Moved by Councillor Midgley, seconded by Councillor Westwood. Councillor Midgley, welcome. Thank you, Mayor. Audio, Councillor Midgley arrived at 5:39 p.m. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you. I'll just open up my notes. Sorry, just...
Just so you're aware, we're holding off on your notice of motion. That'll come up at the conclusion of this item, so you haven't missed anything.
Thank you.
Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, and apologies for being late, managing council role and childcare. Firstly, I'd like to say this is a fantastic strategy, and it's really important for the health and well-being of our community, and really fantastic that we have Mr. Donnelly on board to take this, I guess, to this level. It seems like it's been a few iterations of this, and that there's been great public consultation. We've had fantastic councillor input, and I can note that there's been a few areas that have been changed in regards to responding to these community ideas. Also great to see that the Access Advisory Committee had some input into this. And I note the strategies to guide the provision and design and management of play spaces in Kingborough in order to meet current and future needs of residents as well as visitors. It provides a framework which is the imprint for decision making around playground assets and spaces, and we note sitting around this table when it comes to budget allocation and time that we have often chatted about which playground has priority over others, so I think it's really significant this strategy is in place. It's well structured so that we can see the site challenges and the opportunities at sites, as we know, because no two playground settings or play spaces are the same. It's an aspirational document. It has benchmarks. And it also discusses that we'll continue to engage with community on a site-by-site basis, and also that where applicable that children will be considered in regards to consultation, which is great. I note that it's the scope is from toddlers to elders. The site of parks assessment has a whole of family approach, which is really fantastic. Again, that looks from that whole age range. It was really interesting also to see the playground classifications, that it's from local, urban and regional. Again, it really steps out and provides some understanding in regards to what a local urban playground is to what a regional playground is. And there's also points in regards to respecting Tasmanian Aboriginal heritage and express culture where appropriate. I don't know if many other playground strategies would have that point, so it's great. I also like the point on page 42 regarding risk, where it says, risk will be managed and monitored at all play spaces on the understanding that they are designed to expose children to age-appropriate learning environments, that they are safe but not necessarily risk-free. And I think in this day and age, there's the cotton wool, the lawnmower parenting, all those sort of things, and there's evidence that shows that sometimes the first risk that a young person takes is when they're out and about in the car on their own driving around the street. So it's great to see that the strategy has that as well. I just think it's a really fantastic strategy, and it's great that we have it. It's great that it will be reviewed. In 5 years, we are one of the fastest growing municipalities. There's a lot of families moving into the area, so congratulations to staff.
Councillor Westwood.
Thank you, Mayor. I agree with Councillor Midgley. I think this is a really great strategy. It is an aspirational document, as noted in point 4.2, and I think that's fantastic. I also like that 88% of the submissions we received in response to the OUSA survey were from regular users of play spaces in Kingborough. I'm certainly a regular user of play spaces in Kingborough and on the Eastern Shore, but I'm sure once we have our own destination playground, I will not need to drive over the bridge anymore to go to a playground. So I'm very excited about that. I, like Councillor Midgley, noted that we have an acknowledgement of traditional owners in the start of the document, and I thought that was really nice. I also note the challenges that are outlined on page 21. We do manage a significant number of disparate recreation and playground assets, 45 I think it is, in different states of, in different conditions with different features. And I really like that as part of developing this policy, we council has consulted quite broadly in putting it together, which I think is a significant change from what's happened in the past. I like that the second part of the strategy is to consult, and I think that the recent consultation for Whitewater Park, is it Whitewater Park?
Silverwater Park.
Has been a really good example of that. And I like it that it mentions that they will, council will engage directly with children where appropriate and feasible. Also like that it mentions fencing, it's very important. I think it's a really great strategy, and I think in line with our capacity to upgrade playgrounds from a budget perspective, I look forward to seeing the strategy implemented over the coming years.
Councillor Reid.
Thank you. Like others who have spoken, I just wanted to commend this document and thank our urban designer, Mr Donnelly, for quite a comprehensive session with the Access Committee that we had last month, and that was really useful in, I think, cementing for them that the idea behind this document is that not only can children with disabilities have equal access going forward to the facilities in our playgrounds, but importantly that if they have carers or friends with them who have disabilities, that they will be able to access those facilities as well with appropriate paths and signage and seating and that sort of thing. So I think it's really significant that we do have at 2.8 under universal accessibility that we talk about that our places and playgrounds moving forward will be accessible to users with disabilities and their carers or their supporting family members. And that's quite significant and shows us a major shift in the thinking of inclusive design. And it was always a thing in the past. If you think to look, Drury Point has been a bit of a jewel in the crown of playgrounds in southern Tasmania when it was first developed in 1988 as a bicentennial project. But what's interesting about that, the way that that was formulated, is that it took some of the things like the variety swing and sort of put them off on their own rather than integrating facilities for children with disabilities within the other play space so they could all play together with their friends. So this hallmarks a new line of thinking. I know that there were some great points that were raised by members of the Access Committee, and they are people that we have of all ages. We have a young woman from who's a high school student right through to elderly people who have mobility issues, who are carers or grandparents and would want to visit parks themselves. So they were really pleased with their opportunity to have some feedback. So I thank Council for deferring this previously so that we could have that input. It's great to see their suggestions have been incorporated into the document, and we certainly really look forward to seeing this implemented as we move forward in redeveloping playgrounds.
Councillor Bastone.
Thank you, and I thank Mr Donnelly for this very comprehensive list of all our playgrounds. I just have a question to him through you, Mayor. The local suburban and township playgrounds, one, and then district playgrounds. Some playgrounds are mentioned in both areas, but then we also have a list of what should be in each type of playground, and I'm just wondering which takes precedent. For instance, is the Woodbridge playground local and suburban, or is it a district playground? It's Snug, Woodbridge, Tinderbox, Bonnet Hill, they're all listed as both. I'm just wondering the reason why.
Mr. Smee.
Through you, Mayor, the reason for that is certainly in relation to Woodbridge, the intention is it would be district, but it's not at that stage at the moment. So this is very much the first step in relation to the development of this strategy, in that there's still a body of work to be done in relation to auditing, and there's still work to be done in relation to specific community consultation. So where there's playgrounds that have been listed across two categories, there's still very much an intention that there will be a more definitive classification following those processes. But certainly in relation to Woodbridge, he does intend for that to be a district one.
Thank you.
There's no other lights on, so I don't really want to go over what everyone else has said, except to say that I agree. It's I guess we didn't really know that we needed this until we had it, and I feel like we've been talking about playgrounds for so long and so much without really a proper strategy behind it, and this is it. I'm really interested in the actions, and I guess talks about on page 44 the actions, and the strategy recommends an audit and plan of our existing playgrounds, and this is the issue that I've had with some of our playgrounds. The one at Alamo Place in Blackmans Bay, the one at Maranoa Heights, even the one at Firstside, those three to me are the ones that I keep seeing and think is, we're really letting down a local group with the quality of the playgrounds in those spaces. And I guess by having this audit and plan, we're actually able to reconcile those requirements and the state of those playgrounds back with our capital works plan and budget accordingly. And I hope and expect that that's not just those playgrounds. I'm sure that through an audit we'll identify a whole bunch of them that are in need of some upgrades. So I'm looking forward to seeing those happen. I think Silverwater Park was sort of it's a bit cart before the horse, but it's one of those nice situations where it turns out that what we're doing fits in well with the strategy as well. So really pleased with that outcome, and if we can replicate the engagement that we've had not only with the strategy but then also with Silverwater Park, we're actually setting ourselves up for success in terms of the way we engage with different communities. So I couldn't pick any holes in the strategy. I thought it was exactly what we needed, and I look forward to the implementation of those actions over the next 12 months or so. To sum up, Councillor Midgley. So the motion is moved by Councillor Midgley is that Council endorse the Kingborough Play Space and Playground Strategy 2020 to 2025. Moved by Councillor Midgley, seconded by Councillor Westwood. All those in favour, please say aye. Those against, the motion is carried unanimously. So we're going to move backwards to a notice of motion that we have on page 12 from Councillor Midgley. Would you like to move that motion, Councillor Midgley?
Yes, please. Thank you.
Would anyone like to second the motion? Councillor Cordova. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. So last year when we had a look at the grant policy, we moved that we would note that for a year and then have a look at considering a review. So the motion is in response to that. And I believe that it provides an opportunity to check in about the continuous quality improvement in regards to the services we provide for our community. It allows an opportunity to dive deep and consider what perhaps other possibilities there could be. And I've just, in regards to the motion, I have noted a few things to consider, a bit of a list. I hope that's okay for staff. Just in regards to the quick response grants, that would allow a community group to respond to a community need rather than waiting, say, twice a year for a grant process. The venue grants, noting that it gives, I believe that it does provide us with some transparency around perhaps free venue hire or reduced venue hire and things like that. If we look at naming that up as a grant, perhaps we can actually see what donations and things we do offer to the community. Putting forward the idea of an arts and sustainability focused grants, I just think, you know, why not perhaps look at setting aside something that was particularly arts focused to tap into that community and see if there's any ideas that they could be interested in. And in regards to the sustainability themed type grant. Maybe it's something that KWS might have some extra funds to consider putting some money towards. I note that on the weekend, through the sustainability grants at the City of Hobart, provided they had someone in the community provided for a grant to have like an open garden scheme, and one particular garden had 400 visitors, and that was just through a community initiative. So also in regards to the noting that I've put the match-for-match funding, personally I've had some community members talk to me about that. I'm also aware that council staff have thoughts on the matter, so I hope the review can provide opportunity for them to reflect, to provide some community input and reflections on the grant process and perhaps some aspirational opportunities. So I hope other councillors support this motion.
There are no other lights on. This is the quietest meeting I've ever sat in on in 5.5 years. Not putting pressure on. Maybe it's just... Yeah. Maybe it's just a very, very good motion. So in that case... Oh, Councillor Westwood.
I'd like to say something. I thank Councillor Midgley for bringing this forward. And I think the value in it for me is actually critically... analysing what we do at the moment and how we might improve or change going forward. So I think it's always valuable to have a look at what we're doing and ask why we're doing it, why we're doing it a certain way, or is there a better way of doing it. So for me, that's the real value in this, and I certainly support the motion.
Motion was moved by Councillor Midgley and seconded by Councillor Cordova, and is community grant program and policy review, the review to consider quick response grants, arts or sustainably focused grants, venue support grants, guidelines and government matched funding, our say consultation to seek community feedback to the grant program, scoping of other local government community grants for best practice, grant assessment panel members, community grant information sessions and other matters identified by staff. All those in favour, please say aye. Those against, the motion is carried unanimously. The next item is petitions still being actioned. On page 12, that is, there are no petitions being actioned. Petitions received in the last period, the time the agenda was compiled, no petitions had been received. So now we go all the way up to page 62 for the assessment procedure and decision criteria for tree removal on private land, and there's a recommended motion on page 67. Anyone like to move the motion? Moved by Councillor Midgley and seconded by Councillor Westwood. Councillor Midgley, you're really holding us up tonight. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. I think, I am denied whether I would move this motion. I don't know if I wanted to have my name against it, but, I don't like to see the removal of trees in our municipality, especially particularly native high conservation trees. However, I understand the report is written by experts in this area who value conservation and they value the trees. The proposed changes presents a well thought out assessment and practical change and provides a practical approach and moving to reasonable middle ground. A few quotes there from some council staff when I spoke to them today. I can see the major change is to recommend increasing the size of the area from occupied infrastructure where an automatic approval is granted. It is proposed that this increase from 5 metres to within 10 metres of a home, regularly occupied building, that an application to remove trees is automatically approved. The change will waive any requirement for an arborist report for those applications, which can cost around $300 for an urban tree. So I think we have a lot of, I'm sure many councillors around the room hear complaints about the community, about all the different fees and costs that they have to pay, so I guess this is a win for people as well. It's good to see the biodiversity offsets will still be applied to high conservation trees that fall within the proposed automatic approved criteria, and these offsets may be financial and contribute to the outcomes of the Kingborough Environmental Fund or be direct and involve revegetation on the property. On 4.7 on page 65 it lists several other minor changes. There was just a question that I had. Could I please have a clarification where it says add clarification to assist the decision for when an application is assessed by the law and not the planning scheme? I could just get some clarification on what that means.
Ms. Quinn.
Thank you. Through you, Mayor. At the moment, both the planning scheme and the bylaw regulate tree removal on private land, And one of the key reasons that we use the bylaw is so that people who are applying for tree removal when it's not associated with the development they're doing, with an extension or building a new house or something, don't need to go through the development application process in terms of the time and cost of that process. So the bylaw applications are free and happen much faster than a development application can. So we have determined internal criteria so that when to give some certainty for when a development application is required for tree removal on private land and when an assessment under the bylaw is. And the key difference is that when it's development or work. So if that tree removal isn't part of what would be considered works or development under the scheme, the bylaw is used, as it's a much cheaper and efficient process.
Okay, thank you. A few other points in the report in regards to that staff are going to plan to deliver a number of talk tree sessions. I know there was one in Bruny Island in January, and it's raising awareness of the value of trees to the community. I thought that was a really good point, and I'm just wondering as well, Mayor, if the staff, because it is a change, if staff would like to comment on any other background or reasons why this was put forward.
Ms Quinn, that's an open invitation. Talk about whatever you like. Off you go.
Thank you. Through you, Mayor. This discussion has been ongoing for a long time. We started workshopping the issue with the previous council, and so some of the councillors will remember that. And the idea has come about both to in response to concerns from the community about concerns about having trees around their property and conflict that has occurred because of that with council and whether that's reasonable or unreasonable. But also because we approve a lot of trees. And so the other thing is to limit the resources on council. So this will mean that there'll be less time put into the process by council staff because there'll be more straightforward approvals. So it's not necessarily a good outcome for conservation, as I said, which is why the comment about moving towards the middle, because we will lose more high conservation trees from the landscape that are within that 10-metre zone around properties. But it's a trade-off between that and regulating in a space which is can be very difficult and very emotional for people, and it would seem to be more reasonable to allow people to manage that space within the immediacy of their house or the place they work themselves, rather than put them through this process. So that's why the changes have come about. It really is about a practical and reasonable outcome as opposed to a conservation outcome.
Councillor Westwood.
Thank you. I just had a couple of questions. With the recommendation to increase from 5 to 10 metres, it says to within 10 metres of a home or regularly occupied building. What about shacks and buildings that aren't regularly occupied? Like, what is the definition of regularly occupied?
Ms Quinn.
Through you, Mayor. Good question. That definition will be put into the new assessment procedures, and it will include shacks. I looked for a definition in the planning scheme, and there isn't one. They use a different terminology. It is quite different to define, but we are going to be fairly broad with it. So it's not a shed where you keep the car. It's not your carport. But it is a workshop that you work in when you're working at home or that you're regularly in, and it will be a shack and it will be your home. So we will put a definition, but again, it's going to have to be fairly loose because we're not going to be able to capture everything. Yeah.
Thank you. And then under 4.7, in relation to a BAL rated, where a house is not BAL rated, what does the acronym BAL stand for?
Quinn.
Through you, Mayor. So a BAL rating is a bushfire assessment level? I think, yeah. And so it's what is used by the building standards. It comes up in the planning scheme a lot in the Tasmanian Fire Service to determine the bushfire attack level of a house. So new houses all have a given a BAL level depending on what materials they're built out of and how close the bush is. And so it's that, and older houses don't and default to a BAL level, which I think is around BAL 19. So it It therefore, depending on the bough level you have, will depend on how close the bush can be to you. So they use the bough level to work out how much clearing needs to occur with a new residence. So the higher bough level, the more materials you use that are going to limit the risk of your home burning down, so double glazing and filling gaps and putting out a brick and those things, the less bush you need to clear. Yep. Older houses, lots of gaps, lots of timber, potentially they're likely to have a low or a 12.5 bough level and need more clearing of vegetation, a bigger distance between the house and the vegetation.
Okay, thank you.
Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, through you, Mayor. So a couple of questions. First of all, page 66 talks about communication and consultation, and it says that communication, the review was informed by written and verbal communication received by residents relating to tree regulation over the last few years and also input provided by local arborists and tree contractors. So it sounds like communication and consultation has from people who are affected, who want trees removed, and also by arborists who earn their income from tree removal. Were alternative views from stakeholders who are concerned with keeping trees sought, for example, EDO, Wilderness Society, Land Conservancy, Conservation Trust, etc.?
Ms. Quinn.
Through you, Mayor. No, they weren't. So the consultation to date has been informal and has been in response, as you stated, to mostly complaints that people have written to council over the many years that I've worked in this area, and also from arborists to give both positive and negative both sides of the story. But we haven't done consultation with those organisations.
Thank you. A follow-up question to you, Mayor, about why the OWSAE survey mechanism wasn't used to canvass the views from the community at large, not just people who... Because I feel like a lot of people wouldn't have even thought about the issue unless they were actually canvassed, except people who have an active interest in removing more trees.
Ms. Quinn.
Through you, Mayor. The reason... that we thought this would be better as an inform, so you know you can inform or engage or consult in that spectrum, and we've put this forward to inform the community, is because we feel that we have the expertise to assess the risk of trees in that inner zone, and didn't feel we would get the full spectrum of comments, I think, back for because we've worked in this space for a long time, and I'm open to doing it. I don't have a problem. It would prolong the period before the change came in, but if the rest of council feel that that's important, we can do that.
Thanks. And just one more question, Mayor, about whether or not a workshop was considered. I realise that before my time on the council there might have been workshops about this, but would councillors have benefited from having a workshop on this issue?
I don't know. Mr. Dorr, you might tell we had a workshop on sort of this, vaguely recall. Maybe Mr. Dorr,
through you, Mayor, not in recent times. There would be councillors here who may benefit from that, but no, we haven't.
Would councillors benefit? I guess we'd benefit from a whole bunch of workshops. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you, Mayor. So if you don't mind, can I start my substantive contribution? No, those are just questions. And so this is exactly 5 minutes.
Off we go.
So my time starts now. So I'm not going to vote for this, and I'm going to make my reasons clear, I hope. During debates in this chamber, I have made my position on the climate and biodiversity emergency abundantly clear. I'm a constituency, one of a constituency, of over 1 million people around this country who think that we're living through an anthropogenically induced climate emergency and extinction crisis. We're all witnessing our coastlines erode and our landscapes burn at an ever-quickening pace. As Australians, we provide over the highest mammalian extinction rate on the planet, with more than 10% of our mammal species wiped out since European imperialism began on this continent 2 centuries ago. Now, in life, we are all forced to make compromises, and I commend the incredible work, that I have the utmost respect for, of our environmental team, who do incredible things despite being significantly under-resourced. So I recognise that we are all required at times to find a middle ground to smooth the way for environmentally sustainable development. There is and there should be a healthy tension that exists between give and take. between mutual obligation to each other and mutual responsibility to pass on a community that is better than we found it. There's a balance to be struck between incrementalism and radical change. In this case, the desire to remove more trees versus the desire to keep them in place. The idea, I would have thought, would be to attain carbon neutrality, such as the Australian Capital Territory has already achieved. Now, you might think it's as simple as for every tree we fell, we should plant one. But we also need to consider the time horizon, that an 80-year-old tree with nesting hollows, when felled today, even if replaced immediately, will do not one bit to slow the extinction crisis for another 80 years, because a 40-spotted pardalote cannot nest in a seedling, and a betong will not find its fungi among the roots of a sapling. Worth considering too is the fact that the current regulatory protections extend only to a native Tasmanian tree that has a circumference greater than 80 centimetres at 1.5 metres from the ground. So if we fell all of our 100-year-old trees and replace them with younger trees whose circumference is less than 80 centimetres, what regulatory protections would be afforded to those trees? Might we end up in a situation where we've lost so many vital habitat trees, whether they're near a building or not, so many vital habitat trees from so many green corridors that we inadvertently place species at threat of extinction, despite our valiant efforts to replace every single tree we fell? Have we ever considered that this is exactly what is happening already? Have we ever considered that our valiant and well-meaning efforts to replace the damage we've done thus far over two centuries are but a drop in the ocean of the work that needs to be done? That our synthetic replacement astroturf touch-up job is not sufficient to stop the freight train of extinction? That our program of replacing giants with saplings and replacing hollows with nest boxes just won't cut the mustard? I'll quote from our own Kingborough Council tree hollows brochure that says of artificial nest boxes for conservation, quote, "However, nest boxes are not a replacement for naturally occurring hollows and can deteriorate rapidly in wind and weather. The choice of nest box entrance size and aspect and height at which the nest box is placed will mean it is not appropriate for many species. Other concerns include the lack of insulation from hot and cold conditions and the need to periodically clean artificial nest boxes." This motion proposes that an application to remove trees is automatically approved if that tree is within 10 metres of a home or regularly occupied building. This is an increase from 5 metres. This change will waive any requirement for an arborist report for those applications to save the proponent a $300 fee. Yes, we do need to compromise. We need give and we need take. And the weight of consideration we put at any point along that continuum will be influenced by our values, our upbringing, our expectations, and the information we have to hand. But in this motion, I see more take than give. I see yet another encroachment on our environment without any compromise. We lose more trees, but what do we gain? The financial windfall we get from any offset won't be pocketed. It will be spent replacing those trees, and the environmental benefit from those lost trees won't be felt for decades, by which time the ongoing environmental disruption may well have made those replacement trees ineffectual. Too little, too late to save a species. If you want us to compromise, then offer us something. In return for changing the automatic approval to 10 metres, offer us a change to the regulation bylaw that reduces the protected attribute from a native to a native tree from 80 centimetres to 70 centimetres or 60 centimetres, or offer us an increase in the price of the offset per high conservation value tree from $250 to $750. Offer us something. Give us a request for more tree talk programs and greater funding for those. Don't just expect that we councillors will continue to allow the death by a thousand cuts, the python squeeze of irresponsible environmental alterations at all costs that require us to keep our heads firmly in the sand with respect to the biodiversity and extinction crisis that is staring us down. It's now time to lead and not to follow. It's now time to be brave and not to be shy. It's now time to protect what little we have left, and if not offered nothing in return, then not to compromise. Thanks.
Another light on. That was 4 minutes, 59 seconds, 0.67. Very nice work. Councillor Street.
Just a question to start off with, Mayor. I'm interested in the interaction between the bylaw and the administrative policy with the Boundary Fences Act. It does come in for a mention in the report. And just with respect to those sections of the Boundary Fences Act that say that that trees must be cleared, or that it's a landowner's responsibility to clear trees which are in the line of a fence, and then also a landowner's responsibility for the damage of a fence by the falling of a tree that might be found to be
due to the landowner's negligence and how we deal with that with respect to the policy and the bylaw.
Ms. Quinn.
Thank you. A question through you, Mayor. So the Boundary Fences Act as an act as opposed to a bylaw has a higher power than the bylaw, and we certainly recognise that in the way that we administer the bylaw. So you are correct, if someone is erecting a new fence, a new boundary fence, then and it is in bushland, so not just anywhere, it has to be where there is standing bush, they need to clear 2 metres, and if they want to clear more than 2 metres, they can. So the way that the bylaw deals with that is, again, an automatic approval, so people still need to apply under the bylaw, but if an offset is required, we will still require an offset for that.
Councillor Wass.
Thank you, Mayor. One of the things since I've been on council is that we spend a lot of time on trees and we spend a lot of time on dogs. When we come to trees, I'm disappointed this hasn't gone out for public consultation. We've had 5 metres for some time, and clearly, in the majority eyes, it is not sufficient. And I doubt whether 10 metres is. And that's very well unless, of course, your home has a tree within 10 metres or just over 10 metres. And I was alarmed to hear that it wasn't going to be affected by their car park, their carport. So, obviously, carports can be destroyed. That's not a problem. But houses can be retained. At loss to understand that, because the nature of the blocks and the nature of the trees. A lot of people do like their trees. I think education is the biggest part that we can play to educate our community. But I think if you're going to lock them up and not allow them to cut trees, that quite clearly show it is a risk that is not sufficient and not good enough. In Victoria, in the last eight months, there have been 8 deaths due to trees. And Victoria are on the front foot saying that climate change is here. And I thought Kingborough had decided on climate change, but obviously we haven't. But in Victoria, climate change is here, and the effects of climate change needs to drastically for everyone to reconsider trees. And they are looking at it very seriously, and they've gone away, and they're all working to it. We just want to go from 5 to 10 metres. I don't think that's enough. The most important thing in our community is people. And if you've got a tree over your home, I think most of those people don't rest of a night. And I could probably name off 25 or 30 of them now that have tree issues, and even with this 10 metres, we'll still have tree issues. What about the slope of the land? Not considered. Why not? No arborist report? Look, I think that's great, because for the first time, the punter in community land is not going to have to pay for it. But, of course, the biodiversity offset does. They probably haven't cut the tree down because they weren't allowed to before, and they've had no. And now the biodiversity's still there. So I think council will be seen as money-grabbing and not doing the right thing by the community in general. There was no consultation. This has been done in states from the information we've received from residents over a period of time. I believe that there is a lot to be covered in this. I'm not happy that 10 metres is sufficient. I'm not happy there's a biodiversity offset. Still going to be charged because of that tree, which is totally out of character in that block of land, does cover someone's home. Or cover someone's carport, which I believe should be done. On that basis, I would be happy, Mayor, to move that this item be deferred until a more comprehensive report and a workshop is undertaken.
Okay, we'll try to get that up on the screen. I shall see. Is there a seconder for the deferral? Councillor Cordova, so we'll just get the words up on the screen before. Do you mind just helping Ms. Morton with the words?
Deferred. getting a more comprehensive report, and a workshop is on the table.
Yep. So it's a procedural motion, which means we just go to vote. It was seconded by Councillor Cordova. So it was moved by Councillor Wass, seconded by Councillor Cordova. The motion is that this matter be deferred pending a more comprehensive report and a workshop is undertaken. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Those against?
Aye.
We'll have a division. All those in favour, please raise your hand. Councillors Cordova, Midgley and Wass. And those against is Councillors Street, Bastone, Reet, Westwood and Winter. The motion is lost. So we'll continue. I've got, did you finish your substantive contribution, Councillor Wass? Yep. Councillor Bastone.
Thank you. I just have a couple of questions about this 10-metre rule and the fact we're talking about private land. Now, what happens if we have a council tree on a nature strip that is closer than 10 metres to the people's home and they wish it to be removed, first one. And what happens also if it's on your neighbour's land and they're happy with it there but you're not? Can you help? Can you make the get the trees cut down?
Ms Quinn.
Through you, Mayor. Thank you for the question. Councillor Bastone, so the first one related to council trees. So this change will only apply to the bylaw which applies to private land, so trees on private land. So the simple answer is no, it won't apply to a council trees, to a council tree. Council trees, however, when residents bring up issues about council trees, they're generally assessed by an arborist. So if they don't pose a risk to both any of the targets, so whether it be people on the footpath, cars, or people who live in the home, if the risk is acceptable, then the tree is maintained if work needs to be done on the tree. So we will take whatever the arborist suggests, which is a really similar process to private land as well. It's fairly consistent. We manage trees based on risk, and those risk assessment processes are similar. Arborists apply a similar process for private and public land. The second question about the neighbour's land. So this is a really common situation that occurs, that one person likes the tree and the other doesn't. So what we often do in that situation is it needs to be the landowner who applies. So we'll first suggest that they talk to their neighbour and try to resolve it. Often there's a larger dispute at hand behind the tree issue. But where there isn't, we suggest they need to have landowner consent to remove the tree. So some neighbours will be able to work that out, and the tree, they will apply for the tree, and again, the tree will be assessed. So we would take into account how close it is to that neighbour's house as well. Yeah, but the landowner does need to agree to the application being lodged.
So let me just get this. So because I live in, you know, in the country, but the way the different houses are on the blocks, a neighbour could plant a huge grove of trees well within 10 metres of my house, but it could be 50 or 100 metres from their own house, and it means I can't do anything about it at all. This isn't the case. It isn't happening in my place. It's just a question.
Ms Quinn.
Through you, Mayor, you can do something about that, but it would be a different situation. So you could potentially, you could talk to your neighbour and ask if they're happy to apply to have some of those trees removed, and then the bylaw would be enacted and this new rule if it goes through. But another way is the Neighbourhood Disputes About Plants Act, which is a piece of state legislation which you may come in a few years ago. And that is really designed to look at where trees are having an impact on a neighbour, so whether it's shading, blocking a view, having an impact on infrastructure, and that is dealt with through the Planning Commission. So it's a different matter.
Councillor Street.
Thank you, Mayor. I've listened to the debate so far. This is not a perfect policy and bylaw by any stretch of the imagination. I think that's right, but I think aiming for perfect in this situation is almost impossible. Talking about balancing and give and take, one of the other aspects that I always consider in terms of tree removal on private property are those private property rights of our landowners, and their rights to do with their land, what they wish to do within the boundaries of the policies that we set, obviously, and how we weigh up those private property rights against public benefit. So it's always going to be a difficult balance to strike. I'm pleased to see that we have increased the distance from occupied infrastructure from 5 metres to 10 metres. Whether that is enough or not, I think is something of a moot point, because really we're talking about automatic approvals. Obviously, if there's a tree within that's further than 10 metres and it still poses a risk, then we would expect, or I would expect, that our officers would assess that request on its merit and seek to approve them where possible. It seems to me that we are moving towards an assessment procedure that does better take into account the bushfire risks associated with those trees and the safety of those trees, and I think that's a good thing. And obviously I think it's incumbent upon Council to monitor the progress of that and ensure that those things are put in place and are working appropriately and the community is happy with how they're operating. The one thing that I would flag at this stage is that when the bylaw comes up for review, I would be looking for support for an amendment to the bylaw, which means that where a tree is considered dangerous or a bushfire risk, no offset is charged for the removal of that tree. I think that's outside the remit of this report and the amendment to the assessment procedure. I think it would be better enshrined in the bylaw, but I simply don't see why, if a tree is a bushfire risk or a safety hazard, council should be requiring an additional payment from that resident for the removal of a tree where that removal could quite possibly save lives. So I foreshadow that when we get to the bylaw review this year or next, whenever that occurs, I will be pushing for that amendment to be included in the review.
Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. I just have a couple of questions. I just want to give an example. So, for example, if at my property I had currently had trees that were close 5 metres to the boundary of my house, could I put a covenant, say if I was to sell that house, could I put a covenant on those trees to ensure that they stayed in place?
Ms Quinn.
Through you, Mayor, yes you could. So the bylaw actually speaks to trees where there are conservation covenants or Part 5 agreements, and those things are taken into consideration in the assessment and would be would potentially prevent the removal of the trees unless they were high risk or something.
Thank you. And just how did we come to the 10 metres? Through you, Mayor. How did we come to the 10? I'm interested to know, how did we come from
Ms.
the
Quinn.
5 to the 10 metres?
Sorry, you said it. Ms Quinn.
Through you, Mayor. We presented this and the workshop obviously did predate this current council. So what we did is do a lot of mapping of the patterns of trees in our urban areas. So we looked at how many trees would 10 metres capture, how many trees would 20 metres, and did some buffering out in higher residential. So we did it in Taroona, in Kingston and in Blackmans Bay to look at what are the native trees in those zones and how many trees are within 10, how many are within 20, to look at what impact it would have in terms of conservation and tree removal. And 10 metres in terms of where people move around the house, by a lot of arborists is considered a high-risk zone because of the target risk. So we're not saying that trees outside of 10 metres can't be removed or aren't a risk. We're just saying that within that 10-metre zone, the target of a tree that did fail is much more like the likelihood of it hitting a person is higher within that 10 metre zone, because that is where people often are within their home.
Thank you. And just in regards to some of the points that Councillor Cordova mentioned, I'm just wondering at all, did we consider, in regards to his point about offer us a change to the regulation bylaw that reduces a protected attribute to a native tree of 70 centimetre circumference at 1.5 metres high instead of 80 centimetres? So did we at all consider looking at that in regards to this decision? Like, I guess we're like any other compromises in regards to protection of trees. Does that make sense?
Ms. Quinn.
Or in regards to the, another question in regards to the offset, like do we look at, say, increasing the offset changes Quinn. And things like that?
Through you, Mayor. No, we didn't. And I don't think it would make a sizeable difference to the conservation of our tree estate in Kingborough to do those things. So if we reduced the bylaw, what the bylaw catches, if you like, from trees with a circumference of 80 centimetres to 70, yes, we'll capture more trees in the process, but that doesn't mean that we won't approve or not approve or refuse any more trees. I mean, it really, whether those trees are approved for removal or not is about the criteria in the assessment in the decision matrix, as opposed to, I don't think there's a benefit of capturing trees that are just slightly smaller. I don't think it would have much impact. I don't feel like, from my knowledge of the municipality, there's a lot of people out there carefully measuring their trees, and if they're 78 centimetres, you know, they cut them down before they have to apply for them. Given the high rates of approval that we have anyway, as you can see in the report, I don't think there's enough incentive for people to need to be doing that. We're not locking up trees or stopping people removing trees. We're simply putting, the bylaw simply puts something in place to ask some questions and to talk to landowners about the benefits of trees and ask them to consider that and have real conversations about risk. You know, the risk of a tree impacting on someone is one of the lowest risks there are. There are so many high risks that we're all very happy with and we all face every day, and I think it gives us a great opportunity to have those conversations with landowners, and actually they choose to maintain those trees or have a better take on it. So no, we didn't look at lowering that size or increasing offsets because I don't think it would make enough difference to the conservation outcome. Yeah.
Councillor Cordova.
Thanks. Through you, Mayor, question about how many trees are we roughly talking about? Like, I can see the proportion in percentages, but are we talking like tens of thousands of trees? Are we talking about hundreds? And what do we anticipate the difference between the 5 and 10 metre will be in terms of how many extras we might we might be seeing?
Ms. Quinn.
Through you, Mayor. We're talking about hundreds of trees each year being applied for. Sometimes it might get towards 1,000. Sorry, that's an error in the table there. It should have had the total number to give you some understanding of that. Most tree applications are for individual trees in urban areas, and occasionally, we'll get applications for 20 or 40 trees. But this bylaw It doesn't apply to bushland. So bushland is dealt with under the planning scheme. So we need to remember in considering this that we're mostly talking about individual trees or small groups of trees in and around residential areas and homes. And so as soon as someone moves into wanting to clear 40 trees or more or 20 trees, they're generally in bushland settings, and then the planning scheme is triggered by that.
Thanks. Just one more question through you, Mayor. Are there examples that you can think of in which high conservation value trees were felled within the automatic approval process? So how old might some of those trees be, and why were they high conservation value trees?
Ms. Quinn.
You, Mayor? Absolutely. Yeah. So there's in Kingborough there's lots of really large blue gums and black gums, which are high conservation value trees for the nationally endangered, critically endangered swift parrot, foraging trees, as well as often habitat hollows that are within 5 metres of homes. So along Summerlees Road, lots in Blackmans Bay and some of those areas which have like really, really large, mature, potentially hundreds of years old trees. And also around Howden and Tinderbox, a lot of white gums, which are really important for the 40-spotted pardalote. So there are still large trees within those 5 to 10, both 5 and 10 metres, obviously more in 10 than in 5. But, yeah, we certainly, in Taroona as well, we certainly, some people have held on to those really large trees over their home, and it's generally either something legitimate happens and the tree declines in health, and therefore they come to us to apply to have it removed, which is totally reasonable, of course, or the land changes hand. And so a new lander comes in and has a different perception, different value of the tree, and also a different perception about risk. Yeah, so, yes, we do remove we do allow high conservation trees to be removed that are within 5 and 10 metres of homes. Yeah.
Okay, I was going to make a contribution, but Council Street kind of made it for me. That's my concern's been about that situation. I admit that it's not a very common one where people have legitimate reason to remove trees for safety, and that's proven by an arborist or certainly professional person who says that the tree is dangerous and needs to be removed, is in poor condition, might likely to fall over anyway. We're charging this biodiversity offset policy, but also sitting in Council Street, I learnt that this is something in the bylaw and not policy that we need to deal with, and that's going to be reviewed, so I'm comfortable with that. I don't think this is perfect, I think I think it improves the where we're at, so I'm definitely going to be supporting it. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. I guess from around the table for some of the councillors that have shared, we can see that there's two ends of the spectrum in regards to what we've heard around the table, our protection and value of trees in our community. And as I noted when I first, it was probably surprising that I put my name to actually moving this motion, and especially in regards to what Councillor Cordova has shared. I absolutely agree with the values of the trees. I planted over 100 or more on my land, and I'm always one to fight in regards to our high conservation trees that often at council gets turned over by council staff recommendation. I know I wasn't here earlier before when the planning authority came forward, but the DAS 2019 6 under the planning authority, I think I found out there was about 42 high conservation trees actually lost.
You're not allowed to bring new information in when you're summarising.
Sorry. I think I'm going to do. I really support and I value the NRM staff in regards to this, and I can understand that they've tried to reach a middle ground in regards to, but I do feel perhaps some things that were commented on tonight in regards to putting it out for further consultation and perhaps a workshop perhaps could have been a better approach to go with this, and that as a councillor who wasn't aware of perhaps where this has been to in the past and where it is to now, I'm actually going to backflip and personally not support this going forward because of just the points, again, and the reminder that of Councillor Cordova has shared, and that we didn't declare a climate emergency. So that's my sum up.
Okay, the motion was moved by Councillor Midgley and seconded by Councillor Westwood that the changes as outlined in this report are approved and implemented. All those in favour, please say aye. Those against, I'll have a division. All those in favour, please raise your hand. It's Councillors Street, Bastone, Reet, Westwood and Winter. And those against is Councillors Cordova, Midgley and... Sorry, Councillor Westwood, I didn't record you. Were you for or against that? Four. I'm going to start that again. All those in favour, please raise your hand. Councillors Street, Bastone, Reet, Westwood, Wast and Winter. And those against is Councillor Cordova and Midgley. The motion is carried. Next item is on page 68, and it's compostable dog poo bags, and there is a recommendation on page 69. Someone like to move this one? Councillor Reet.
This was as a result of a petition that we had before us some 4 weeks ago, and was calling on some compostable bags for the collection of dog poo by dog walkers to be supplied. It made for quite interesting reading, actually. I was interested, not knowing a lot about dog poo bags. I was interested to know that the ones that we actually do have at the moment are in fact biodegradable, and they can break down into smaller pieces over time. And that the alternative is the compostable bags made from plant-based materials. But the bit I found particularly interesting was that the compostable ones don't provide a benefit unless they're actually properly placed into a composting environment. So if they're not, then they perform similar to the biodegradable ones, and that's not something I think any of us had probably imagined when we had looked at this petition and thought about, well, this is a sensible outcome. So it does place us in a bit difficult position to say, well, we should go ahead with those because they're not necessarily going to give us a better outcome in the short term before we have a FOGO system where we can have some proper composting, and they could become part of that. However, we are interested in moving forward and looking at it as part of our budget deliberations of where we might be in that situation with FOGO and whether there is an opportunity in the future. I do find it interesting, and one of the comments was here, that people, they collect their... They take their dog for a walk, they take dog bags with them, the dog does a poo, they collect it, and then they dump the whole bag?
Yeah, they tie it to
trees. Oh, excellent. Oh, great. Why even bother then? Like, I just... Sorry. it's a mystery to me, anyway, the behaviour of... We have many responsible dog owners, but we clearly have some who behave strangely as well, because I don't understand picking it up if you're then going to tie it to a tree or dump the bag somewhere. I just don't get it. Look, hopefully we can look at this going forward, but I think it's certainly been a learning curve for all of us in terms of the suitability of the compostable ones at the moment.
Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. Yes, I also did some Googling on compostable and biodegradable, and spoke to a few waste knowledgeable friends. And as Councillor Reet says, people do unfortunately leave dog poo bags when they go for a walk. I think they think, oh, yes, I'll pick that up later, and they get talking and perhaps forget to go and pick up their bags. But that then does lead to the biodegradable bags becoming microplastics, and not disintegrating, and yeah, we all know about microplastics and the increase of that in our community. I just had a couple of questions, actually. So I'm wondering at all if we considered to sort of look at this as a Kingston Beach, because we know that it is a $20,000 budget consideration. I'm just wondering at all, Mayor, if we perhaps looked at just implementing it at Kingston Beach at a trial, if it doesn't get up in the budget to spend all of the $20,000.
Mr. Reeve.
Through you, Mayor. Look, I guess the simple answer for it is that you could do it in one separate area. I don't think you'd get the benefits just by doing it in one small area there. I think you'd be better off actually doing all in or none in, so to speak. Bearing in mind the real benefits are for probably those areas where you're going to get people who may be misusing the dog bag system. In other words, they're throwing the dog bags away, or they're actually finding their way into the environment as compared to being taken away and disposed of. So they're more likely to be, or the problem areas we tend to have is more on some of our tracks and trails. They tend to be, I guess, longer stretches there. People take their dog for a walk there. And I guess when we're doing any sort of clearing of vegetation, clearing there, we're likely to come across dog bags that have been thrown off into the bush, which is not great from an environmental perspective. So you might be better if you were going to trial some areas there, to trial some of those areas rather than some of the urban areas.
Thank you. I have a few more questions, Mayor. So in regards to the problem that we have with people littering their dog poo bags, I just can't remember if we have, I think we have dispose of your whatever bag, you know, thoughtfully or something like that. But do we need to have some more communication to the community in regards to, you know, don't drop your dog poo bag, put your dog poo bag in the bin perhaps, I don't know, to put it out there to people? I'm just wondering if we thought about doing anything like that as well alongside this.
I'm going to give my two bobs worth here.
Okay.
I don't think people I can't imagine people picking up the dog poo and then deliberately leaving it somewhere, because if you're going to be an irresponsible dog owner, you're just going to leave it. Well, I think what's happening, particularly down at Kingston Beach, because now I'm a dog walker at Kingston Beach, is people are dropping their dog poo bag and then they're continuing on their walk because they don't want to carry a dog poo bag for the next half an hour. And then when they come back, it's gone because we have some really helpful members of the community. And other times they do forget. I'm not sure there's a problem in terms of... Oh, hang on. Oh, might have said the wrong thing. But I'm not sure there's a problem here to be solved with irresponsible... I mean...
Oh, it's not about... No, sorry, Mayor, it's not about that. It's just in regards to... We do note that people do leave their dog poo bags around on different trails, and we've just heard from staff.
Yeah.
It's more about just a gentle kind of reminder to, you know...
Mr. Reeve, maybe you can answer better than I did. Through you, Mayor. Look, it's a good question. I mean, it's a difficult one in terms of how far you would actually go in terms of trying to communicate with people and trying to ask people to do the right thing. I know I've got an example on... I'm on the other side of the river there, and I've got an example of areas there where people, unfortunately, do dump their dog bags. So clearly they've actually done the right thing and or people have done the right thing and actually picked up the dog poo, but they'll find a convenient place there. It could be a vacant block or whatever, and you'll see there's a whole heap of them that are actually dumped there. So they're not just put down by accident, they're actually dumped there. So it is unusual. So I guess what I'm saying is that there is a proportion of people there who maybe feel shamed into doing the right thing in terms of actually using a dog bag, but then when the opportunity is to actually put it somewhere else, then they may actually put it somewhere else. So there's certainly been that experience around. I'm not saying that's the case in terms of any of our areas around here, but I'm saying there is a proportion of that sort of behaviour that actually happens. Will education actually fix that part of it? Not that side of things, no. Is it worthwhile going through and doing some communication on that? I think it's always worthwhile going and giving people some communication on a whole heap of things, not just this area as well. Because I think that does actually help, and it's certainly something we could actually look at. Will it actually moderate that type of behaviour? Maybe, maybe not.
Thank you. I've got a few more questions. I'm aware that the City of Hobart and Glenorchy Council are looking at compostable dog poo bags. Have we at all had any conversations with them in regards to a bulk buy dog poo bag compostable purchase?
Mr. Reeve. It's through you, Mayor. Yes, we are aware that they're also looking at this option as well at the same time there, and it would certainly, if we intended to go down that track, we would certainly see if there's any efficiencies of scale of actually combining with any bulk purchases.
And Mayor, I'm just wondering if we've considered any increase to dog registration fees perhaps to help with the cost of this in our budget.
Mr. Reeve, good idea. Through you, Mayor. No, not in terms of this particular one, but it is a possibility. I guess the fees and charges come towards council shortly as well at the same time, and I guess that's something that could be considered as part of the overall budget process.
Thank you. And I guess, you know, hopefully we'll move to FOGO, and I had a look on the other council's websites in regards to what can go in FOGO, and dog and cat litter and compostable bags can go in FOGO. So I think if we are to consider this for our budget, it's a great step forward, and, you know, we're just moving ahead really in regards to doing better for the environment in this regards.
Councillor Westwood.
Thank you, Mayor. I feel a bit conflicted about this because I've been harassing poor Mr Reeve since, I can see here, the 4th of December 2018 about wanting compostable dog poo bags. But I guess I didn't fathom that there would be such an additional cost to them, like double what we're already paying. The other thing which isn't mentioned in this report is whether there's a cost to changing over the approximately 90 dog poo bag dispensers we have. So, Mr. Reeve, do you have, through you, Mayor, an indication of how much that upfront capital cost might be?
Mr. Reeve.
Through you, Mayor, we envisage you'd probably use the same dog dispensers. So it's just a matter of a change over the bags more than anything. So they're very similar in terms of what they are. They come in a roll, just a slightly different number of bags in the rolls that you get at the moment. So there won't necessarily be a cost in that. At the moment, as I mentioned in the report there, the responsibility with the contractor who actually does the pickups there is to actually keep on stock the biodegradable bags. So if council was to go down the track and actually implement compostable bags, then you would like for them to actually use up their stock first before you actually moved on to the compostable bags.
Okay, so the compostable bags that we can buy will fit in the current dispensers.
Mr. Reeve.
So just to confirm then that the bags we buy will fit in the current size dispensers that we have.
That's my understanding, yes.
Okay, thank you. And also, like Councillor Reed, I wasn't aware that we needed to dispose of them in a different way for them to be compostable. So I feel that potentially introducing them before we have FOGO might defeat the purpose of that. I certainly hope that after we roll out green waste bins that we will be able to implement stage two, which is FOGO, and I'd certainly like to be using compostable dog bags at that stage. And also I would support, as Councillor Midgley has suggested, a small annual increase to the dog registration fees to pay for compostable dog poo bags as part of consideration in the budget process.
Councillor Midgley, were you?
I just have one more question.
Yep.
I'm just wondering if compostable dog poo bags can go in green waste bins, and that will help with the decomposing.
Mr. Reeve.
Through you, Mayor. Not in green waste, so you'd be looking for that FOGO service there so that they can actually go through that compostable thing process. Otherwise, we'd be having a more difficult conversation with the people who would be taking the green waste to, and there'd probably be an additional cost in terms of them adding that to their compostable pile.
Just another question, final question, Mayor, is in regards to another idea for a revenue to cover this. Could we perhaps look at selling the compostable bags at customer service centre, and perhaps adding, you know, a little bit more cost on those, I guess, for the community to buy for the home use and things like that, and that could be another way of implementing, receiving some revenue to help offset the cost. I'm wondering if we've thought about that.
Mr. Reeve.
Through you, Mayor. Can't say that one's actually come to my attention. I'm not so sure if any other councils actually do that, bearing in mind that, I guess, they're offered for free in lots of different areas. So if you were going to actually do that, then you might have to reconsider how we actually roll them out as well, because at the moment I guess people can go along there and help themselves to as many rolls of dog bags they want.
Councillor Gordover.
Thank you. Through you, Mayor. I think this is a good motion and a good recommendation, and we've seen that there's at least 194 people in the municipality who think it's a good idea, and above and beyond that, you know, we've got 19,000 dog bags being used per week across the municipality right now. So the fact that there's going to be an environmental benefit as well as the capacity to implement this along with FOGO, I think is a good thing. And the environmental benefits will be considerable. And it's been an interesting to hear what all the options are, either for cost recuperation or for investigating the different options that we have. But I think on this one, moving to a compostable product would show improved environmental stewardship by council, and that's a good thing. And so I support the motion.
Councillor Bastone.
I just have a question. How many dogs are registered in Kingborough? So I want to know how many poo bags each dog is getting every week.
Mr. Reeve, you'll know that. Sorry, Mr. Smee.
Through you, Mayor, it's 6,500.
How are you? Is that so 4.7, it says the current use of dog bags per week is estimated to be 19,000 across the municipality. Is that a typo?
That's what I'm asking.
Is that really true?
So we base those numbers based on the uses that the contractor's having, bearing in mind that doesn't necessarily they're being used for the right thing. We are looking at the fact that we have a lot of dog rolls that are actually on the outside of the bin there, so it's quite easy for someone to come along there and knock off an entire roll of
question answered, thank you. The bags of 19,000 bags are being used, but not 19,000, probably not that many. So another way to eliminate plastic bag use might be to do what you just said, which sounds like a good idea. I like this idea. I get Councillor Reed and Councillor Westwood's concerns, though. We'll see how we go at the budget. Councillor Reed, would you like to sum up? Okay. The motion is moved by Councillor Reed, seconded by Councillor Mitchell, is that Council consider the implementation of compostable dog poo bags as part of the 2020-21 budget deliberations. All those in favour, please say aye. Those against, motion is carried unanimously. Next item is the no spray register. It starts on page 70. There's a recommended motion on page 71. Someone like to move? Councillor Mitchell, and seconded by Councillor Reed. Councillor Mitchell.
Thank you, Mayor. Another favourite topic of mine, no spray register. I note that the purpose of this report is to request that the policy no spray register be rescinded and filed as an internal admin policy, and that... sorry, I'm just reading what I've written here and my notes, and I hope I'm making sense. I'm just going to... Anyway, so basically it's about... excuse me, everybody. I'm being a bit clunky. I'm just going to bring the report up, Mayor. Sorry. One thing I did note in this, though, is that we didn't actually get any track changes to the policy, and I'm just wondering why we didn't get a note of any track changes. There aren't any. Okay. That's why. Okay, basically, so it's just a change. There's no track changes, and it's in line with, how it should be. So... Sorry.
When I say there aren't any, the policy is not being changed, it's being filed as unchanged as an internal administrative procedure, so we're not proposing any change to it except for the way it's dealt with. There's no other lights on, which means this is your last and final call. The motion was moved by Councillor Midgley, seconded by Councillor Reet. The motion is that Council rescind policy 5.10 no spray register and that it be filed unchanged as an internal administrative procedure. All those in favour, please say aye. Those against, motions carried unanimously. We move on to information reports. It's 7 o'clock. Would anyone like a break? Nope. Okay, information reports. Looking for a mover and a seconder. Of the motion, which is on recommended motion, which is on page 75, moved by Councillor Bastone, seconded by Councillor Mitchell. First item is the GM's diary. Councillor Street has left the room at 6:58 p.m. and so has Councillor Westwood. Councillor Reet.
I just wanted to ask about the Kingston Congestion Package Working Group. Sounds like such a fun group. And I guess it's kind of, that's hand in hand with City Deal implementation, but I'm just wondering if the General Manager can provide us some update in relation to some of the work that might be being progressed or otherwise.
General Manager.
Through you, Mr. Mayor. Thank you for the question, Councillor Reid. Yes, it does relate to the Hobart City deal. Councillors will recall that under the City deal, Kingborough Council is to receive $20.8 million towards Kingston congestion challenges. The 0.8 being proposed for a utilisation in the bus interchanges with the imminent upgrading of Channel Highway. The remaining $20 million, suffice to say that early days in the Hobart City deal process, council officers identified a number of projects, including, councillors might recall, the Spring Farm Link Road, Park and Ride, etc. The congestion working group has been established because during the process of the city deal, at one stage there, it appears that some members of the Department of State Growth forgot that the funds were earmarked for Kingborough and were suggesting that perhaps they were for Hobart congestion busting as opposed to Kingborough congestion busting. The steering group has been set up to get clarity on the priorities, and there will be a report coming to Council shortly.
Can I just ask a further question on that last point? Whilst you're saying that there will be a report coming, is there any agreement, now that you've had the first meeting, is there any agreement that, given that they are congestion busting, if you like, strategies for Kingborough, that Kingborough Council actually does get to have a say in what takes place, or do you get the impression that the final decision will lie with the Department of State Growth?
Ms. Rahm.
Sure, Mr. Mayor. Councillor Reid, to be perfectly honest, at certain stages during the last few months, had you asked me that question on any given day, the answer might have changed the very next time we met with the Department of State Growth. Suffice to say that at this point in time, the one thing that officers from Department of State Growth and Council are comfortable with is that works are continuing to scope up requirements for a park and ride at the Algona Road roundabout and also to investigate the potential for a park and ride at Firthside.
Yeah, I'm not quite sure that actually did answer my question. Okay, let me phrase it a different way. Are you confident that the Kingborough Council will be afforded an adequate opportunity to put forward the projects that we believe would be in the best interests of the area to combat the traffic issues?
General Manager.
Through you, Mr. Mayor. Yes, Councillor Reid.
Okay, that's a surprise.
Councillor Bastow.
Yes, just wondering if the General Manager can tell us the result of his discussions with the representatives of the John Street Medical Centre.
General Manager.
Through you, Mr. Mayor. Yes, Councillor Bastone. Councillors will recall that quite some months ago, Council resolved to sell what is known as Parcel O to the John Street Medical Clinic. That sale had been progressing, albeit slowly. We've had a couple of recent discussions with the representatives from the John Street Medical Clinic. One of the junior doctors and her partner are looking to acquire the business, and there has been a sudden escalation in the progress of the sale, and we're now quite confident that the sale is imminent, probably in the next few weeks, most likely.
Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. Just wondering in regards to the meeting with Plan Build Tasmania. Please.
General Manager.
Through Mr. Mayor. Councillor Midgley, Plan Build are currently developing an online portal for the state government that will be able to be utilised by all councils and also the vision is customers of planning departments for the councils. That work is continuing. The state government have invested millions of dollars in it, but suffice to say the end product is not quite available as yet.
The next one is the current and ongoing minute resolutions. It's on page 77. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. Just wondering in regards to the Kingborough Youth Arts Prize, when that might be coming to an agenda.
Mr. Smee.
Through you, Mayor, I believe it's already come to Council and the implementation of the resolution is actually going to be the delivery of the event or events. I don't think there's an intention that a further report comes to Council.
Sorry, I should have asked in regards to when is there any data that's happening or do we have any further information and outcome on that?
Mr. Smee.
Through you, Mayor, so the anticipated date for that is September of this year. I'd need to take on notice the question about the exact details of what's planned.
No, the light's on, so move to...
Yep,
did I miss one? Oh, sorry. Hi. Councillor Westwood.
The Bruny Island Boat Club petition, is there any update on the negotiation of the lease agreement?
Yes, Mr. Smee.
Through you, Mayor, I know that our property officer has had a number of meetings with representatives of the boat club, but as to where it's at, I'd need to take that on notice.
Mm-hmm. And the recreational water quality at Blackmans Bay Beach, I understand we had good recent water quality results. Is there any likelihood that we might review... Or is there any date that we can put on reviewing the decision to have the sign changed?
Mr. Dool.
The rating upgrade.
Through you, Mayor. I think we're about a month away from the end of the season now, so once all the results are reviewed, I think we will make an approach to the Director of Public Health, who is a little busy at the moment. He probably will still be then as well. So, but I think... we will try and have it reviewed before next season, but it is in his hands.
Thank you.
Councillor Mitchell.
Thank you, Mayor. Just one more quick one. In regards to the Tassel Community Advisory Group, I think that's been on since I've been at Council, but are we taking any action on that? I have people constantly emailing me in regards to Tinderbox and the, you know, what's happening out there and the noise and different pollution in the bay. I mean, are we taking action on that? I guess I'd like to see some movement. What can we do about it?
Mr. Dool?
Well, it's a strange situation because we are in the room with both Sam and partners as part of the Doncaster-Hewan collaboration. So we actually have quite a good working relationship. But that... specific group, I don't even know what the status of it. I don't even know whether it actually ever got to fruition. And the staffing at the company has changed quite significantly since that was first mooted.
I think we might need to review that one being on the list, hey? Mm. Yeah, good point, Councillor. Any other questions in relation to this? I had one and I can't find it, so we'll move on to the Kingborough Waste Services bi-monthly report. Councillor Westwood.
Well, I note on page 89 of the minutes, it says, Council would like to get an indication of the thought of the board on the payment of a dividend to Council of excess cash. At the moment, KWS is sitting on almost $800,000 in operational cash. So that was good. And then over the page it says, that it was resolved that KWS should, in conjunction with Council, establish a policy that permits KWS to operate with appropriate working capital and also provides for the distribution of surplus funds back to Council. KWS to seek input from Council, CFO, in determining such a policy. So I think that is a very good idea. I did ask a question at the end of the last financial year about the operational surplus that KWS had, and I think the answer at that time was that it was difficult to accurately estimate various parts of their budget revenue. But I notice again 6 months through this year that they're again recording a surplus, and so if a dividend could be paid to Council to help our budget situation, I would be very supportive of that.
Yes. Deputy General Manager.
Through the Chair, yes. The Board is currently considering that, though I should say that all surpluses of the operations of KWS go straight back to Council regardless. So in effect, all the money that KWS earns goes, in addition to its costs, goes to Council in any case.
Could I maybe ask a question? Is it possible to have a workshop on how KWS operates? Because it really confuses me.
Oh. You've asked the wrong person.
I don't know where to start. Yes, it's possible. Yeah. It's possible. We should have one. Yeah. Yeah. We do need to... I think we'll put... The General Manager and I will put something on the agenda, on the workshop agenda. Councillor Street.
I have more questions than we have time for. So I'm going to limit myself to one. Noting that Mr. Breen's not here this evening, which is a bit unfortunate, I am wondering whether Council will need to pay tax on the dividend that gets declared out of KWS. I assume the answer is yes. Does anybody have any idea on whether that's accurate or not?
We'll take it on notice, Councillor Street.
Okay, well, then you can have the supplementary as well then, which is if those monies were... If Kingborough Waste Services operations were managed by Council, would there be any tax on the surplus operational funds of our Waste Services Division?
Yeah.
You can take it on
great notice. Questions, Councillor Street. I don't know who was next. I think probably Councillor Bastone was.
Oh, thank you. On page 89, 8.2, waste fees at Barretta and Bruny Island transfer stations, bearing in mind that they seem to be making quite a lot of money at the moment, I'm just wondering why they're proposing increases for both Barretta and Bruny Island transfer stations. Why on earth would they be wanting even more money, particularly for people who don't have rubbish collection?
Mr. Ferrier or Mr. Reeve?
Through you, Mayor. I guess when you have a look at these things, you need to look at the entire waste program, not just KWS. So you need to look at everything in context with that. So it's not KWS making lots of money. This is, as we said, the surplus actually goes straight back to Council as well at the same time. So I think that's the first thing to actually recognise. So for the operation of Barretta and for Bruni, so bearing in mind Bruni actually runs at a loss there. There's quite a large subsidy that goes with the Bruni operation. And for the Barretta operation there, there is a return from the Barretta operation. But part of that return there also goes into subsidising some of these other aspects as well. So it's not just about that side of things there. There's things like the bin transfer from Bruni to Barretta as well that has to be paid for. So some of those other aspects need to be taken into consideration as well.
Thank you, Mayor. Just had some great news about waste. Looks like Hobart Council's passed the bylaw. Very exciting. So in regards to the questions that Councillor Westwood and also Councillor Street, and in regards to a workshop, I'd be very supportive of that as well. It's a bit of a blur. I don't really understand how it all works and how we sit as council alongside this. And as I noted in the grant motion, it'd be great if perhaps the KWS could maybe consider a sustainability or a waste focused community grant. I just had a question in regards to the area, the traffic light sort of area. I'm wondering if at all we can add a column with saying outcome. So we've got the other columns there and the green lights, but I'd be interested to know have an outcome column. Could that be possible at all to add that in future?
Through the chair, by outcome, do you mean whether that goal has been achieved?
Yeah.
That's what the green light is indicating that it has.
It does.
I'm just... And the comment describes, I guess, the outcome. I was just wondering what additional information you were seeking.
So I'll pick on one. So the community gardens and home composting. So it'd be good to know, perhaps, how many people attended the workshops. If there was people new that attended the workshops, was there any behaviour changes that were made? Just a bit more details. And I also note with that one that, for example, there was 30k allocated to that expenditure, and we did not expend all of the 30k in regards to what was originally planned for that. And the extra money, I think I spoke to Stuart today, and he said they spent 17k on that, and then the extra money was utilised to buy, which is fantastic, to buy the bin lids for the Kingborough Community Hub. So that's what I've found out today, and I guess it provides a bit more kind of information rather than just a progress. But perhaps if just the comment is okay in regards to that. Any changes or learnings or anything like that, they're all just very positive, and maybe that's just how it is. I don't know, that's just a point.
Mr. Reeve?
Yeah, through you. Look, I don't see a problem with that. What we can do is actually put another column in there with just some key dot points in there that probably actually covers off on what you're actually saying there, so that you can actually see, okay, there is a green light that goes with it to say it's on track there, but here is some of the key things that actually have been achieved over the last 6 months, 12 months, or whatever it happens to be, and that'll provide that extra information for you.
That would be great. Thank you. I am very interested in this area. And also noting there's a mention of the public recycling bins in Kingston Beach, and now I have had some email conversation with Mr. Reeve regarding this, why we didn't put any signage on the bins. And I note in the report that it states we are going to put them also in Bruny Island. They are high tourist areas. Even greeny friends and people who are into recycling sometimes have to, you know, question what they put in their recycling bin and have to double check. And I think if we are in a high tourist public area, it would be good to put just some stickers or something to actually note what can go in the recycling bins, and especially if they're going to be implemented on Bruny Island. I think that would be important.
I think Mr. Reeve.
Yes, through you, Mayor. Look, I agree with the ones on Bruny Island there, because you're getting a lot of other people there who are not necessarily locals who might actually be using those bins there, and that provides that extra information for them. What we are going to do with the ones down Kingston Beach is... It's a little bit of a trial, if you like, so we'll see how they go, see how much contamination we actually get within those bins. If we need to, then we'll not only look at putting some more signage in there, but doing a bit more communication as well, in terms of what should or shouldn't actually go in those bins there. So it is a bit of a trial in the first instance there. Hopefully, we have high hopes that people know what should go in recycling, and it's been around for a fair while, but we'll see.
Thank you. And just a note on the home composting booklet, I'm wondering if we could have a copy in the councillor's room, please.
Councillor Street.
Sorry, I have another question. I'm just having a look at the profit and loss for KWS. When we had a report back on Councillor Cordova's motion for free green waste weekends. I note that there's a line item for revenue, which is free green waste foregone revenue. When we got told what the cost to council of that free green waste weekend was, were we getting the disposal cost or were we getting the foregone revenue cost? Because they're two completely different things, and the foregone revenue cost would seem to be what we were given, but I just want confirmation of that.
Mr. Reeve.
Through you, Mayor. So bearing in mind that to do the free green waste weekends is an initiative by council as compared to by KWS. So council actually pays, I think it's about $40,000 per year for the joy of doing green waste weekends, both on Bruni and at Barretta there. So when I guess that doesn't come, you know, that all that money doesn't need to be spent, or they have their free green waste weekends there, and maybe you don't get as much throughput. So there is some revenue that they don't actually achieve through that process. I think the answer to your question in terms of when you actually ask how much does it cost for us to actually run a free green waste weekend was the actual cost of actually doing that. So it wasn't to do with actually the foregone revenue. It was actually to do with how much it would cost for us to actually run a free green waste weekend. So if you're going to do an additional one, that was the expected cost that was going to actually go with it.
Okay, I understand that. So the follow-up question, therefore, is why do they account for foregone revenue? I assume from your answer that we pay them per load. So if that's the case, why do they account for foregone revenue? Surely the revenue is what the revenue is.
Mr. Reeve or Mr. Ferrier?
Yeah, through the chair, my understanding of that is that that's the processing of the green waste is going to cost KWS, and normally it would actually get revenue to do that, and that's the amount of money that is not getting to process that waste.
Sorry, I hate to labour the point, but didn't Mr. Reeve just say that we pay KWS though to facilitate the Green Waste Weekend?
You're down the rabbit hole of the difference between KWS and council. You'll be in it. You'll burrow down for years, mate. There isn't a real difference, Councillor Street.
No, I know.
It's all made up. Sorry, continue on. I shouldn't be
through the chair. I think it's in a more of an accounting exercise where it's the foregone revenue, but then council has to pay KWS for that foregone revenue. So that you'll find that there's an equivalent cost under the expenses that is under the revenue, so they balance out.
Okay, before we move on, we'll do a workshop. We'll do something. Okay. Okay. The next item is the Environmental Services Quarterly Activities. Councillor Bastone.
Thank you. This is on page 103, 1.7, private water suppliers. It says here they're currently finalising the renewal and registration of private water suppliers in accordance with the provisions of da-da-da-da. These are for higher risk accommodation, education and commercial facilities that utilise water from a non-reticulated source. When we ran a bed and breakfast, for some time we had to pay the council, not that they ever came to our house or did anything, because we were deemed a private water supplier because people could brush their teeth with water from our tank. Now, what I'm wanting to know is this in fact coming back to that situation where bed and breakfasts who are not on TAS water will be paying a registration to be a private water supplier?
Mr. Dorr.
Through you, Mayor, the detail of that I may have to take on notice, but certainly my understanding is that it is more a notification process for the smaller ones, so we know where they are, but the significant registrations are of the bigger private water suppliers, commercial premises.
Could you give me an example of a larger private supplier?
Through you, Mayor, possibly somewhere like Bruni Island Cheese or something like that, commercial premises.
Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. I really loved reading this report. It gives us a great update on the fantastic work of the staff that are doing this area. It's great to see... Oh, my light is on. Sorry, I couldn't see if my light was on. It's great to see that there's action taking on the signage awareness in regards to devils, because there has been an increasing of that over the years. And they're working with schools in regards to environmental initiatives, and just congratulations to staff re the Browns River salt marsh restoration work that's happening there. I note also that the interest in the natural areas and human health, and again, that's another growing area, and there is a conference coming up in regards to that, and I have spoken to staff in regards to the work that they're doing along that area. Good to see in the notes about cat management. In regards to Mary Knoll Reserve and Hunting Field, as we know, the impact of cats and habitat. So good to see that we're able to perhaps provide some initiatives in this area. Thanks for the pictures of Scruffy the cat. I did note the photo of the mayor. I'm not sure. You didn't look too happy in that photo, Mayor, I thought. I don't know what you're looking at, but I thought... Anyway.
His favourite topic.
Yes, we had Scruffy the cat.
I was there very...
That was good.
Well, I have the photo's been pointed out to me, and I will try and be happy next time.
Maybe you were asked to be Scruffy the cat.
I was standing. Yeah, who's in the photo with me? Who else is in the photo? Yes.
Conrad Daniels talking about the trapping program.
Yes.
Yeah. Erica Betts. Yes. So in regards to the solar table, I'm aware that GHG is greenhouse gas reduction. What is ROI?
Return on investment.
Return on investment, sorry. I just had a brain. I read that later in the afternoon. My brain's not
working.
Another
coffee, yep.
just in regards to the information about Ricky and the UTAS partnership, perhaps could I just have a bit more information in regards to understanding this and perhaps future developments for council in this area? Would be great, please.
Mr. Dool.
Through you, Mayor, that's an ongoing program that's under negotiation with UTAS, subject to the scale of the program will be in direct relationship to whether they get a grant, UTAS get a grant for it. And it is more to do with climate change governance and guidelines for local governments and things like that. So it's a bit of a process that we have actually already done a fair bit of work on, but it's to bring a whole load of the smaller councils up to speed by providing templates for climate change governance and assisting them. Does that make sense?
Councillor Street.
Thank you for the report. All the best to Mr. Dool and his team over the next few weeks. I think it's going to be a big period for them. One query though, and it's purely because they're listed next to each other in the report, 1.4 and 1.5, is there a point in time where we are going to, I don't know, wrap these drinking water fountains in something to stop people from using?
Mr. Dool.
Through you, Mayor, potentially. I mean, I've heard of circumstances where there will be no public rubbish bins because we won't be able to collect the rubbish, things like that. So, yeah, it is quite possible, and they're the kind of contingencies that we will have to think through, how we do service public places and what is available.
Councillor Bastine.
Yes, I'd just like to ask a question about the road signage raising awareness of the devils. And in one part it says permanent signs can be expensive and only target a single location. Isn't there, in fact, a permanent flashing sign on the Woodbridge Hill Road?
I feel like you know the answer. There is. Yes, that's the answer. Do you want a further explanation?
Why is
it? Ms. Quinn?
Through you, Mayor. Yes, there is. It was put in 5-6 years ago at least, probably. So we're not saying that those signs aren't effective. We're saying they're less effective because what, I guess, the ongoing research is showing is that drivers do not change their behaviour, or very few drivers change their behaviour in relation to those signs. The sign on Woodbridge Hill Road was is a more expensive sign because it does actually change. So we can change, so it's actually, as opposed to a picture of an animal on a sign, it is a sign that changes and tells you whether what your speed is in terms of, so people can actually engage with the sign, if you like, more than they would just a static sign. So it's one step further than a static sign in that it looks at people's speed, and we can change the messaging on the sign and download data from the sign to learn more about do people actually change their behaviour. So it gives us that ability to monitor and work out if those signs are effective. What we've learnt over the time is that they are less effective than the variable signs.
So would that then mean that you might move it from there and put it somewhere else?
Ms. Quinn.
Through you, Mayor, we haven't thought about moving it. That is certainly, it's on a state growth road as well, yep. It's certainly an important, really important site, still place for road cool because of the conditions of the road there. What we would probably look at, I mean, we could remove it, but it's not like it would be more effective somewhere else, I don't think, because in what we're actually moving to do is to look at the trials that have been done on the posts which change the animal's behaviour as opposed to changing the human's behaviour, because it appears like there is more chance that we will change animals' behaviour and how they move around in roads than we will change human behaviour. Make of that what you will.
Councillor Gordon.
Thank you. Through you, Mayor. A question about Peggy's Beach Reserve and the fuel break works, the shaded green fuel breaks. I'm looking at the photo on page 111.
Thanks, Councillor Loss.
And I'm interested about, because it kind of harks back to me to, there's a Bill Gammage book, The Biggest Estate on Earth. My question is how effective they are, and can we get a bit of background about, how many more of those we should be thinking about having? So I guess maybe a good way of wording it would be, if there were unlimited resources to implement these green fuel breaks, would it be good practice to extend them all around the periphery of all of the urban fringes in Kingborough? Like, are they really useful to mitigate bushfire risk, and should we therefore be trying to do more of them?
Ms. Quinn.
Through you, Mayor. Thank you, Councillor Cordova. What we are doing is implementing these shaded breaks in places where the bushfire management plan has suggested that they would be useful. So in some situations, and that depends on the type of fuel in the reserve and how close and how dense those residential areas are. So it's not that they would be appropriate everywhere, and in every reserve the widths of the breaks are different based on the fuel loads aspect, all of those things that get taken into consideration. So shaded breaks are certainly a new and emerging way to manage bushfire risk, and the thinking is, and our bushfire officer has attended quite a lot of conference workshops on this issue lately because it's something Hobart City Council are doing as well, is that a lot of the heat comes from the fine fuels, and it's the fine fuels that catch on fire and climb up into the canopy of those trees. So in a lot of situations, taking out those fine fuels reduces the heat and therefore reduces the impact of the fire on the adjacent properties. It maintains a level of biodiversity, of course, by having the canopy still in place, but also having the canopies in place lowers the drying of the soil, which changes the soil dryness index. So there's some benefits both ways there for biodiversity and also reducing the risk. Would we, if we had all the resources in the world, implement them? I haven't thought about that. We wouldn't need to necessarily, and in some cases we would need to do a fuel break that had no fuel in it based on the site. So it really is very specific to the characteristics of those sites, which is why we have bushfire management reserve plans, and they're site-specific. Yes, we do need to do more fuel breaks in Kingborough, and we are responding to that by using the risk assessment that was done to work on the highest priority, highest risk sites first.
That's great. That's really informative. Thank you. And where's the next place on the list? Like, what are the next ones that we'll be doing?
Ms. Quinn.
Through you, Mayor. We've just completed a shaded break at Beretta reserve on the southern end of that near Slattery's Road. We've also got shaded breaks at our Gona Reserve, so we'll be monitoring their performance over the next couple of years. After that, we will be looking at potentially breaks at Alum Cliffs Reserve. Trying to think where the next ones are, because we've actually done a lot of them. Potentially Whitewater Creek. We might. We also will do some work at Spring Farm when the new reserve comes to council there as well.
Okay, that was the last one. There's no further lights on, so and also for the audio, Councillor Wass left the meeting at 7:29 PM, and actually I don't think I mentioned that Councillor Street and Councillor Westwood both returned at 6:59 PM. So the motion was moved by Councillor Bastone, seconded by Councillor Midgley, that the following information reports be noted. 1, General Manager's Diary for the period of 3 February 2020 to 28 February 2020. 2, current and ongoing minute resolutions. 3, Kingborough Waste Services bi-monthly report. And 4, Environmental Services quarterly activities. All those in favour, please say aye. Those against, the motion is carried unanimously. And we now move to confirmation of items to be dealt with in closed session. The motion is that in accordance with Regulation 15 of the Local Government Meeting Procedures Regulations 2015, Council, by absolute majority, move into closed session to consider the following items. Confirmation of minutes, applications for leave of absence, tender assessment, Brightwater Road, Stage 2, AB 2001, supply bins and provision of curbside collection services for green waste, Kingborough Waste Services, appointment of new chair, and current and ongoing minute resolutions. So I'd like to move and second that. Moved by Councillor Reid, seconded by Councillor Street. All those in favour, please say aye. Those against, motion is carried by all those in the room. In accordance with the Kingborough Council meetings audio recording guidelines policy, recording of the open session of council, well, this council meeting will now cease and the open